Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Today is March the 2nd. Today is Ash Wednesday, 2022. And Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. Tom, this will be the warmest day of the year so far. We could be pushing like 85 degrees.
Yes, it's not going to last long, though.
No, which is fine with me. It's too early to get into that kind of warm, very warm weather.
Enjoy it while you may.
Okay, we'll have a nice warm day. What do you say? It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. The radio station is KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line for our monthly visit with Tucson City Councilman. He represents Ward 6 in the city of Tucson on the council, Democrat Steve Kasachek. Councilman, how are you?
It's way too soon for it to be this warm.
I agree, and that will impact your running schedule. You'll have to start running progressively earlier and earlier in the morning to stay cool.
I already start like before sunrise.
Yeah,
that's going to be tough. Anyway, yeah, no, well, way too early.
It's so helpless. All of us, I hope all of us are feeling for the brave men, women, and children of Ukraine. Imagine being in a bombardment for, 14 straight hours in that encirclement of the Ukraine's second largest city, Kharkiv, just completely surrounded, looks like a siege. Imagine that. And, you know, I was glad that the city of Tucson, City Hall, last night bathed in the colors of Ukraine, blue and yellow.
You know, I'm going to try not to come across as a war hawk in this response, but first of all, yes, I agree with everything you said. A guy like Putin doesn't understand anything but power and strength. And so while these sanctions may, over the long haul, have an effect, we're sitting watching on TV this 3 to 10 mile long or however long convoy heading towards Kiev. I'm thinking, why don't we blow up the road? Why don't we just, these guys are like sitting ducks. And the Ukrainian-American society in Tucson is holding a rally demonstration to show our support of the Ukraine's sovereignty and their territorial integrity. It'll be this Sunday in Hakami Plaza from 1 p.m. until about 2:30 or 3. And it would be great to see people show up and show their support. And I'm getting emails from people literally, Bill, every day who are saying, I've got friends and or family in the Ukraine, in Kiev, and how can we help get them out? And, you know, my answer is, my gosh, I mean, we're having trouble getting munitions in, much less getting people out. And we've all seen the video images of the people, you know, stacked up at the Polish border and, you know, the trains and, you know, all of that. And so a couple of thoughts. First of all, I'm glad that the reaction of the West is to solidify our relationships again in support of Ukraine. The other thought, though, is again, I don't want to come across as a guy who wants to fly bombers over there, but I would like to fly bombers over there, you know, and just get that, stop the convoy. Show them, give them some air support. I mean, all the talk about hitting Putin in the pocketbook doesn't mean jack when the guy controls his own economy. So I'm really distressed.
Yeah, by the way, it is a 40-mile long convoy, and it has stalled, which I think is good news, but...
Yeah. So why not blow up the road in front of them if you don't want to, you know, blow up people? But and it's also comforting for me to see. Sorry to sound so on this, but I am on this. This is, you know, my granddad on my dad's side, who was a first generation immigrant from that part of the world, and we're watching this convoy kind of slowly roll towards Kiev and blow the road up, stop them. You know, give them some air support, bless the Ukrainian people for, you know, getting, you know, training and saying, we're going to defend our country. And I can't even imagine anybody not supporting what they are trying to do right now. And it's also comforting to see some, even the Russian soldiers and the Russian people, saying, "We don't want this. This is not, you know, we didn't call for this."
Yeah, and some of these reports today, late this morning, from the Wall Street Journal about the convoy of ambulances going over into Belarus with all the Russian wounded. There was a train that it took, according to some of the eyewitnesses in Belarus, the train unloading the wounded, Russian wounded, took 2 hours. We're talking there must be thousands of dead and wounded Russian soldiers.
Well, I don't want to say, though, and I'm just guessing, I obviously don't know, but I'm just guessing that those guys didn't like walk up to the Kremlin and say, "Hey, send us into the Ukraine. We want to go fight them."
No, these are mainly draftees, conscripts.
Yeah. These are guys who are saying, "Why are we doing this?"
It's crazy.
It is crazy, and the guy's lost whatever was left of his mind was there before this, and it is really nice to see the world stepping up. The Ukrainian, I'm in contact with the Ukrainian American Society at Tucson, and they are asking people to help show their support by showing up on Sunday, and I'm going to try and be there, and I hope that we just fill Huckabee Plaza. But that's not going to stop the bombs, but
no.
maybe it'll help. And we do have a pretty healthy Ukrainian American community here locally. This is coming on the heels of the fact that we're still dealing with the Afghan situation.
Yeah.
And the refugees that we have here in Tucson who are still living in hotels. And they can't, because of our housing market, they can't find housing. And so this is just this issue lumped on top of the other. And, man, it's certainly not anything that the international community was looking for.
And bless the Polish people accepting one day this week, I think it was yesterday or the day before, they took in 100,000 Ukrainian refugees, no questions asked.
Yep,
anyway, there's craziness going on up at the legislature, and there's even a lawsuit now by the state Republican Party to do away with early voting in this state.
Yep. So we will, I'm sure, join that. We do have a Prop 411 coming on May 17th. It will be an all mail-in election, and the ballots will go out on April 20th. So we are not going to be affected by that insanity. But I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, we're talking about Putin on one hand, and then we talk about a different level of crazy in the state legislature. They are concocting conspiracies and they're concocting fraud where it doesn't exist. And we have had successful and open and transparent elections literally for years with the multiple election cycles. And nobody is able to point at any indication or any example of fraud having taken place within our elections. And these folks up in the legislature just seem to need to dip their pen in our inkwell and say, "You can't do it your way any longer." I don't know where the lawsuit's going, but I'll promise you that the city of Tucson will be a party to it when and if it gets to that point.
The city of Tucson would not be allowed to play any role in providing housing within our community. Is that what is going on with this bill that would limit cities and towns in Tucson and other places in the state from affordable housing work?
Yeah, I think it's as Senate Bill 1446 or 66.
Yes, it is 46.
Okay.
Yeah, 1446.
All right, well, so I thought last time I looked, we had a housing situation where people were being priced out of the market. And we had an affordable housing crisis, and we were trying to find ways that we could be a player in getting people into housing that they can actually afford. Right now, the average price of a new home in Tucson is over $400,000. And the rental costs increased last year in Tucson by north of 30%. and the new housing prices, I think, went up by almost 25%. So we, the city, are right now looking at vacant parcels, at structures that we could go in and purchase to renovate for housing with an affordability component built into it. And the state legislature right now is saying that we can't even play that kind of a role. I don't get it. I mean, there is another bill that they have going that actually ties into this, and that is they were going to offer a grant to any jurisdiction for, I think it's $500,000 or something like that, to provide a structured encampment for homeless people. But the caveat, which is fine, but the caveat is that we have to have on our books a local ordinance that says it is illegal to camp outdoors, to sleep outdoors, and you have to enforce it, which is to say we're going to throw people in jail if they're sleeping outdoors if we want to qualify for this other grant. I don't get it. I mean, these folks up in the legislature, there must be something in the water up there, because we have to criminalize homelessness and we can't play a role in affordable housing. It's like an oxymoron on steroids.
All right, Steve Kasachek, I want to talk about comfort food right now. Boy, could we all use a little Mona's Danish Bakery, huh?
Absolutely. The cherry turnovers, the apple turnovers, I'm all over it.
All right, Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle. They are open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for breakfast Tuesday through Sunday, 6:30 in the morning, and people are waiting for them to open. I don't blame them to get their pastries. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Go to the website if you have any questions about their wonderful menu. They've got beautiful pictures for all of the menu items now on the website, Mona's Danish Bakery. Check it out, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, right after the break.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Would today be a great day to go over to Green Things? You bet it would. With temperatures in the mid-80s, talk to the very knowledgeable people over at Green Things. Simple question to them, but sometimes the answers can be complicated. What do I plant for the spring that's going to give me some nice color and that can withstand some maybe moderate pre-summer kind of heating? You know, nothing outrageous like 110 or anything like that, but some beautiful color for your garden. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. It's a beautiful 13-acre site, open daily in their 51st year. Their website, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is zocalovillage.com. Let's welcome back now to the program Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek. And we were talking, Councilman, about the situation with affordable housing. I see that the council has freed up, I guess there's $22 million in unused federal emergency rental assistance, and this money could be used to help a lot of people who need help right now.
Yeah, those dollars are coming to us from the state because we were effective in distributing the dollars that we had already received. We've got a waiting list, and there were caveats built into who would get the money, who would get the allocations, and you had to demonstrate that, I believe it was 65% of the cash that you were sent the first time was effectively allocated. We're over 90%. We've got people down at our housing department who are doing a great job of getting these dollars out the door to help people with rental and utility assistance. And that's the reason we qualified for these added dollars. It's again, as we were speaking before the break, it's no surprise to anybody that the cost of housing, whether it's a new homes or rentals, is out of people's reach in many cases. And so this is really going to be important money for us to have. And I give high marks to the housing department staff who has done just a great job in making sure that we're not just letting the dollars gather dust down at City Hall.
We haven't asked you, and it's been many months since I brought up the former Benedictine Monastery over on Country Club. Gone by there, it looks like things have really, really progressed. What is the latest with that property?
So I actually spoke with the owner, Ross Rolney, last week. They are about 50% leased out right now. I asked him if that was a good number in his world, and he said he's very pleased with it because they just began taking lease commitments in, I want to say, August. So it's, there's barely 6 months into this. And that was only for half of it. They have a north and a south housing complex, and they had only finished the south half when they started taking the leases. So they're about 50%. He felt that it would take them about 2 years to get fully stabilized and fully leased out. But in fact, they're gonna beat that by quite a ways. The other thing that's happening over there is a series of retail components. They will have a restaurant. They will have a there's a workout facility, a gym kind of a deal. They're going to have a bike repair shop, largely for the tenants who live in the residential areas. There's going to be actually two restaurants. I mentioned one. There's going to be a couple, and they're right now finishing out those spaces so that the retail component can come online as they are finishing up the north residential. So they're making good progress. I see it, you know, pretty much every day also, and I will say I'm pleasantly surprised at the visuals. You know, they did a good job from an architectural standpoint. They didn't try and copy the Benedictine, but they but what they wound up with from an architectural standpoint is it plays well with the historic architecture. And people need to remember that we could have lost that that Benedictine monastery if things if this rezoning had gone in a different direction. So I, you know, Ross is a team player. He's I think doing well by the community, and the community I think is has got a lot to be proud of in terms of stepping up and really demanding that we preserve that iconic structure for in perpetuity.
So two questions: are people living there now, and what about this? They are living there, and what about the signature of the property, the former sanctuary? What I haven't been in there, I ought to stop and go in. If there's anything even to see in there, what's the situation?
So yes, people are living in the units right now. That's what's about 50% leased out. So they are living on site.
Okay.
It is still a construction site. They're still finishing up the northern portion of the residential, and they're still finishing up the improvements on the interior. So if you went there now, you could not walk into the sanctuary. Without a tour, but if you did, you'd have a hard hat on and you'd see that they are building out the interior for the eventual restaurant that's going to be, you know, it's going to occupy this space. You know, I was surprised. If people who've been in there before, they look at this just, you know, huge, you know, this high ceiling and what looks to be a huge space. And I was talking to Ross months ago, and he was saying one of the challenges they had in finding a restaurant tenant is if you just simply look at the footprint, the floor plate, it's smaller than the old Rincon Market and the attached grocery.
Wow.
And you don't get that sense when you walk into these high arch ceilings. And so they were wrestling with, okay, what tenant can move in there with such a restrictive floor space? And also remember they had those huge columns, you know, the big round columns that were supporting the arch. But the actual square footage that they're trying to fill is something like 6,000 square feet, and the old Rincon Market is now Flores is around 10,000. So I was surprised to learn that, and that's been one of the challenges that they had in terms of finding a tenant.
We had Fletcher McCusker with us on the program on Friday. He says downtown is just really booming now.
I'm really pleased with the relationship that we have with Rio Nuevo. You remember 10 years ago we were in litigation, and now the new board, though, Fletcher and his team have really been great partners. We have three or four hotels going right now. We're talking about more residential things other than and in addition to student housing. The Flynn is going up. We've got the AC Marriott. We've got another hotel by the TCC. Rio Nuevo has put tens of millions of dollars into their signature, and that is the TCC, their signature land piece down there that they own and that the city is managing for them. So it's a great partnership right now, and I want to extend that even east of downtown because we just had a very great partnership with them in terms of putting the Sunshine Mile overlay in. And so what the work that Rio is doing is not restricted just to the downtown core, but all the way out to Country Club as well on Broadway, where we have some really creative local businesses that are going in right now that are really going to kind of extend the successes we've had in downtown out east a couple of miles.
Yeah, most people don't understand that Rio Nuevo the district does extend to the east. It's not just a real tight corridor in the downtown area.
It actually goes all the way out to Wilmot.
Wow.
But they're restricted to the commercial components, both north and south of Broadway, all the way out to Wilmot. And so what they're doing is working sort of incrementally in terms of the commercial build-out. One of the reasons they jumped all over the Sunshine Mile overlay is because of the historic component. And we had a great relationship with a group called Project for Public Spaces and the community. We had five or six different neighborhood groups who work with Rio and Project for Public Spaces in designing the components of the overlay so that it respects the integrity of the surrounding neighborhoods, but it preserves the historic buildings that we have alongside Sunshine Mile so that we get some compatible, local, scaled commercial in along that corridor.
All right, before we wrap it up, for folks just joining us, talk about, in the remaining few seconds, the Ukraine support event. I believe you said it's Sunday?
Sunday, March 6th, Hakami Plaza. The group will assemble between 1 and 1:30. There will be some Ukrainian singing, some American national anthems, and it's a peaceful protest. It is going to be all in support of solidarity of the Ukrainian sovereignty and their territorial integrity. Really, just to phrase it, you know, we're going to demand an end to Russia's ongoing war in the Ukraine and the occupation of the Crimea and the other territories in eastern Ukraine. So this is not just for Ukrainian Americans. This is for anybody who wants to show support of what's happening in the Ukraine right now.
Thank you very much, Steve Kasachek.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll take a break right here. When we come back, the top picks for the Southwest Books of the Year, the competition for 2021. We'll announce the top picks right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. 2021 was the 45th annual Southwest Books of the Year competition presented by the Pima County Public Library. The Southwest Books of the Year features titles published in the calendar year 2021 that are about the Southwest subjects or are set in the Southwest. It includes fiction and nonfiction titles, as well as a selection of books for kids. The competition is made possible by a grant from the Friends of the Pima County Public Library and by the Arizona State Library Archives and Public Records. Today, we're going to discuss 10 books designated as top picks. Two of the Southwest Books of the Year judges are with us, reviewers, to talk about the cream of the crop of this year's submissions. Dr. Bruce Dingus is with us, retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society, and Arizona Daily Star literary critic Helen Woodhams, retired from the Pima County Public Library, where she was very much involved with the coordinating of the Southwest Books of the Year. She was the literary arts librarian. Helen and Bruce, good to see you again.
Hey, Bill.
Good to see you, and let's plow into this list. Bruce, do you want to quickly say a few comments about kind of the overall list this year of submissions?
It's a mixed bag. We weren't able to meet in person this year, so we sort of all went out on our own and compiled the books that we liked and suggested them to others. And we all came up with, I think it's kind of a more diverse list than we've had in the past just because of that, thanks to COVID. My selections, I was really pleased with some of the best reading I've done in a while. And plus, I've had more time to do the reading.
Let's begin with one of those selections you liked very much, a novel, The Five Wounds.
This is one of those books that reminded me in my reaction to it to Barbara Kingsolver's The Bean Trees. I started grabbing people and saying, you've got to read this thing. It's Quaid's second time on our top pick list. Her debut collection of short stories, Night at the Fiestas, made the 2015 list. And the main character in this story, Amadeo Patea, is a sort of deadbeat father and aspiring penitente, and he appears in her first novel. And it's just a beautifully rendered book. It's kind of fractured people, marginal. That's set in northern New Mexico. They make bad choices. But they do the best they can, and that comes through in the love they feel for each other, and that Quaid is able to convey. It's just one of the most beautifully written books. The dialogue is spot on. The characters, as flawed as they are, you root for them. You want them to succeed. Just an altogether satisfying read.
The book is titled The Five Wounds. It's a novel by Kirsten Valdez Quaid. Is that right,
yes.
Bruce?
Yes.
All right, let's do one of Helene's picks, The Forgotten Botanist, Sarah Plummer Lemon's Life of Science and Art by Bruce Brown. Helene, what was that?
Wynn Brown.
Oh, excuse me.
No, it's fine. This is a biography of Sarah Plummer Lemon, who was the very intrepid woman for whom Mount Lemon is named. She was a botanist, a gifted botanist, and had many plant species named after her. And she was also a wonderful botanical illustrator. She also was a lecturer, and she was a journalist, and she was a suffragist, and she was an activist. And it was through her 10-year campaign, constant campaign, that California named the California poppy the state flower.
Really?
Sarah loved a good cause. So she marries a Civil War veteran, botanist J.G. Lemon, and they honeymoon in the Santa Catalina Mountains.
Hmm.
On their fourth try, they make it up to the highest peak.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the mountain that's named for her. And they would go back to Arizona often to go botanizing, as she called it, and dodging Apaches and socializing with like John Muir and Clara Barton. And they were like, the 19th century power couple. An important note about the illustrations in this really nice book, Wynn Brown spent 7 years researching and in the course of her research, gained access to the two surviving boxes of Sarah's really exquisite botanical prints. And you can see several of them in the book. The tragedy here is that most of Sarah's artwork did not survive the San Francisco earthquake.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They lived in Oakland.
And it sounds like it's a beautiful book.
It's fabulous. And she's such an interesting person. Yeah. And Wynn conveys her so well. It seemed to me like Sarah Lemon was a really good choice for naming a mountain after.
All right. That book title again, The Forgotten Botanist, Sarah Plummer Lemon's Life of Science and Art by Wynn Brown. Let's go back to Bruce Dingus. And one of Bruce's picks, Wildcat, The Untold Story of Pearl Hart, the Wild West's most notorious woman bandit.
Yeah, this is just a great book. John Bosdicker is a great historian. He leaves no stone unturned, literally. And most of what we know about Pearl Hart, who's self-styled Arizona's bandit queen, is derived from Pearl Hart, which means most of it's exaggerated or downright false. And John just goes back to square one and starts hitting the newspapers and the archives. And so we find out that... of course, she's famous as a stagecoach robber here in Arizona. Spent time in the Yuma Penitentiary, and there's a famous photograph of her in men's clothing out by the Pima County Jail holding a rifle. She's really Canadian. Her name is Lily Davy, and her family is just fascinating. And John tracks it down. She had an abusive father, brothers and sisters. Her mother was kind of dumped and had to moved them to the United States. And Pearl and her brothers and her siblings had to make it pretty much on their own in Victorian America, where you don't have social service agencies or anything. And their two talents were self-promotion, all of the family, self-promotion and larceny. And it's just a fun read. Her sister was an accomplished actor and playwright. Her brother was an accomplished thief. Belle did whatever it took to survive and seemed to have had a good time doing it. And so as a result, we've got an actual factual life of Pearl Hart that's probably more interesting than the one she tried to conjure up.
So if you like Southwestern history, this sounds like a great read for you. Again, the book Wildcat, The Untold Story of Pearl Hart, the Wild West's most notorious woman bandit. Let's go back to Helene Woodhams for one of her picks, Driving While Brown, Sheriff Joe Arpaio versus the Latino Resistance. What about this book, Helene?
So this is first-rate reporting. It's by two journalists with 20 years of boots on the ground reporting about the two opposing movements that kind of redefined Arizona's political landscape. On the one side, you have, they call it the restrictionist or the anti-immigration movement, and on the other side, you have the Latino-led resistance. Now, Arizona's immigration story is big, and it's complex, and it's messy, but these authors make it accessible by giving the Arizona story, immigration story historical context, dating all the way back to 1847. And they humanize it by introducing the players and identifying the two main ones. One is Joe Arpaio, who becomes pretty much the face of institutionalized racism, and activist Lydia Guzman, who gathered the evidence for the racial profiling case that was Arpaio's undoing. I was impressed by how even-handed this account is and very deeply researched. Between them, the authors interviewed more than 100 people, on both sides of the policy divide, and they reviewed thousands of documents. And the result is a book that shows how one community rose up to resist civil rights violations. And I feel like it's a book that tells you what Arizona can teach the rest of the nation.
Again, that book is Driving While Brown, Sheriff Joe Arpaio versus the Latino Resistance. Bruce Dingus, I'm going to go back to you. Let's see if we can squeeze one more in before our break. Becoming Hopi, a History.
This book is as interesting to me as for how it was put together as it is for what you learn about the Hopi. It's a product of 15 years of collaborative research among archaeologists, anthropologists, and tribal consultants under the auspices of the Hopi Cultural Preservation Office. And what it does is it describes what we think is a sort of static society is actually a dynamic society, and its evolution from primitive clusters to villages to the Hopi villages we know today. And it posits that the reason the Hopi have survived is because they have been so good at adapting and assimilating other cultures, and that is where their strength lies. Also, to their credit, the authors try with varying success not to speak in academic jargon, so that the book is accessible to lay people, to native peoples, to non-native peoples alike. So it ought to have a wide audience, lavishly illustrated, beautifully done book by the U of A Press.
Sounds like a nice research book about the Hopi for sure. All right, Helene Woodhams and Bruce Dingus, stay with us. We'll take a break right here. We're talking about 10 of the 2021 top picks of the Southwest Books of the Year, and we'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners. They've pretty much been with us. We're now into the 12th year of the radio project. They've been with us pretty much at least 10 years. We have sent a lot of Southern Arizonans over to an area that many people from Tucson say, I have never been there. They go there and they come back and they say, I had a great experience, which we love to hear. You can find out more about the many activities like visiting the world famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument and hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where to stay, what to do at Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org. Helene Woodhams and Bruce Dingus are with us. Helene and Bruce, two of the reviewers of the 2021 Southwest Books of the Year competition. Bruce is actually in the competition is 45 years old. Bruce, I dare say how many years you've been a judge? 35. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Should we leave it at that? No, but you've...
Please.
All right, Helene, let's hear about a couple more of your favorites. We'll begin with a book titled Treasured Legacies, Conservation, Art, Education, and the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Now, I have a copy of this book, and it's a beautiful book.
I brought my copy to share with you. I didn't know you had one.
I have a copy.
Just exquisite. So for nearly 70 years now, mm-hmm. The Arizona Sonora Desert Museum has been finding ways to teach us about the Sonoran Desert. And this book is a kind of a joyful celebration of that history. And it's filled with historical anecdotes and memorable personalities like George H. Mattenlion, who's on the cover. And it's all tied together with the really stunning scratchboard art of Priscilla Baldwin, who founded the Desert Museum Art Institute. The book also includes descriptions of compelling outreach and programming that drew people since 1952 to the museum. And for instance, if you grew up in Tucson, you might remember Hal Grass. He might have come to your school. He was the first public relations director, and he would travel in his Desert Ark, which was this old unair-conditioned Nash Rambler, and it was filled with all these friendly desert critters, and you could get up close and personal with a ringtail
cat. And he'd take them to the schools and everything. It was terrific.
And he would take them to, civic associations and so forth. They also talk about raptor free flight, which is a breathtaking program, and it's done completely without traditional falconry equipment. It's just marvelous.
Yeah, it's a nice book.
Tucsonans with fond memories of the Desert Museum, and I think that's probably all Tucsonans, will really treasure this book.
Another book you like, Send a Runner, A Navajo Honors the Long Walk.
So this is a book about a Navajo runner who pushed himself to the limits of physical endurance to honor the memory of his ancestors. The background is, in the summer of 2018 was the 150th anniversary of the return of the Diné people to their ancestral homelands from captivity in the Bosque Redondo. Now, years earlier, they had been removed from their home and forced on the Long Walk to military captivity. A little bit of ethnic cleansing that decimated about a third of the tribe. So author and Navajo ultra runner Edison Esquites ran the route of the Long Walk to honor these ancestors. He ran from Canyon de Chelly to Santa Fe, New Mexico, 330-mile route, and he ran it in 15 days.
Oh, wow.
The equivalent of running a marathon every day.
Yeah.
The first mile, he ran it in his moccasins, okay? He was 59 years old when he did this.
Oh, my goodness.
Just going to throw that in there. Jim Christofik is the co-author of this book, and he is a three-time Southwest Books of the Year honoree. The book is divided into 15 chapters, one for each day of the run, and it goes from the punishing physical realities of the run to Navajo history. It's filled with Native lore, mythology, and the beauty of the spiritual landscape he's running through. And you cannot help but be moved by this.
The two books you were just articulating on, The Treasured Legacies and Send a Runner, they'll have a special place in the...
Well, what I'd like to mention, thank you for allowing me to do this, the Pima Library Foundation is sponsoring two free live-streamed author salons. One will feature the authors of Treasured Legacy. The other will feature the authors, Edison and Jim Christofik, of Send a Runner. You can find more information at the Foundation's website, and probably also from the library's homepage. But the Foundation's website is thepimalibraryfoundation.org.
All right, let's go back now to Bruce Dingus, The Low Desert. Gangster Stories, that's a book that Bruce likes very much.
I'm embarrassed that I'm a big fan of noir fiction, and I wasn't familiar with Todd Goldberg until this book of short stories came across by desk, and boy, I've had missed something. He's got three or four books I need to go back and read. They're mostly set in the area around the Salton Sea or in Las Vegas. His characters are small-time gangsters and wise guys. He has just really tight prose, sly wit. He's got a wicked sense of humor. And it's a way in which setting and personalities kind of intersect. The desert meets these hard-boiled criminals trying to make a go of it. A couple of college professors who double as hitmen, that sort of thing. So if you like James Cain or Jim Thompson or Raymond Chandler, this is a book for you.
The Low Desert, Gangster Stories by Todd Goldberg. Bruce, I'll keep it with your review here of the last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour.
Another big surprise for me. I'm a huge fan of Ricky Lee Jones, going back to her breakthrough performance at Saturday Night Live back in the 70s. And here we see what I didn't know is that she has spent her preteen and teen years growing up in Phoenix in the 1960s. And this just is really kind of a unflinching memoir of her evolution from streetwise delinquent to jazz and pop icon. Her parents were kind of vagabonds. They moved from house to house in the Valley. She went from school to school. No surprise, she was the odd kid out. By the time she was 17, she had stolen a car, served time in juvie, lived hand-to-mouth in a hippie commune, and had hitchhiked from the Pacific Northwest to Canada and back. Eventually, she was drawn into Southern California at a really interesting time. She formed attachments with Tom Waits and Dr. John and others who nurtured her musical talents. And this book is not, oddly enough, a music biography necessarily. It's a story of self-reliance, staying true to yourself, and the perils and joys of family. She's married in Bisbee, surprisingly.
Really?
And came back here. Her father, after the family broke up, her father remarried and died in Bisbee. So there's a lot of Arizona in here. And there's one thing at the end. She says, you have to be prepared to grab magic in life and stay true to family, who she says will break your heart either way. So it's the kind of book you don't have to be a music fan to enjoy. Extremely well-written, very insightful. She's a treasure.
Ricky Lee Jones, Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. And I only have about 1 minute for Helene Woodhams to tell us about the fifth book that she likes very much, Letters to Helen, from Julian Hayden. Go ahead, Helene.
So this is a love story that reflects the devoted 42-year marriage of Southwest archaeologist Julian Hayden and his beloved wife. They were an unlikely couple. She was a sophisticate from the East. He was a rough and ready Westerner, but they married after a whirlwind romance, honeymooned in a Model T on the banks of the Gila River. When she passed away in 1976, he was bereft. To keep her alive and near him, he started writing her letters, and it comforted him, and he wrote her a letter nearly every day for the next 20 years. His letters are part love song, part desert diary, and they speak poignantly of his loneliness for her, and they're pure poetry. You can pick up this book and open it anywhere to read a few pages, and it will feel like an embrace.
All right, that's Letters to Helen from Julian Hayden. All right, Bruce Dingus, Helene Woodhams, thank you for talking about 10 of the top picks for the Southwest Books of the Year competition. Folks can find the complete list of all of the top picks at the Pima County Public Library website. Bruce and Helene, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Great to see both
Happy
of
reading.
You. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Bruce Dingus and Helene Woodhams on behalf of them, and our fine engineer producer, Mr. Tom Fairbanks. On the other side of the glass, want everybody to stick around. Dave Ramsey's very popular show on money is coming up right after CBS Radio Network News. Have a great afternoon.